Welcome to another edition of the Inside Scoop. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm your host and also the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. If you're not familiar with Inside Scoop, it's a podcast dedicated to helping parents learn about the soccer pathways that would be available to their child if they lived in another city around the world. And this show is brought to you by Anytime Soccer Training. Anytime Soccer Training is the only training program with well over 5,000 training videos that cover all the major individual skill areas. So check out anytime-soccer to learn more about the program. You can join for absolutely free. Again, anytime-soccer.com to learn more about the program. And now let's get on to the show. So over the course of this year, in several shows, I've tried to give my opinion on the role that the brain plays in the skill acquisition and learning process. And this process is commonly referred to as neuroplasticity. And once again, the origin story for that was I was doing things with my children. And then I started doing the same process with my friends' kids. And then that process grew into Anytime Soccer Training as a training program. And I started getting feedback. And it was through all of that that then forced me to go back and figure out if there was any research or science that supported what I was doing. Even though, again, I spent some time in education, so I had some inclination of that. And that's kind of how all of this started coming together. My own experiences, a little bit of common sense, my experience in education, my experience with working with so many different kids, my experience with the training app, and then going back and figuring out, is there any science that really supports it? And I wanted to crystallize that in my mind for my own sake, and also in the advice and context I offer to our parent trainers. So now that we've established in these previous shows what neuroplasticity is, and we'll go over that again. Now we're at the point where, and we talked about this too, where when we listen to youth soccer content, normally it's directed to coaches, but it's also directed to parents and helping educate parents. We have to remember that a lot of that advice does not consider what is happening in the brain. And if you're not considering what is happening in the brain and you're not using that framework, and you're not thinking about it in that way, then while what you're saying makes sense, it can be a little misguided. So where I want to step in is offer my own opinion, my own perspective, so that others can chime in and we can have a richer conversation, including conversations about and perspectives about the brain. And again, I do this for a number of reasons. Number one, I want to hold my own self accountable. So if you're listening to this, and you have a different opinion or you're an expert in this subject, then I invite you on a podcast to help clarify what I'm saying and offer a different perspective or some your own knowledge or whatever. I really would appreciate that. So I have to be a little vulnerable to share my opinion so that others know exactly what I'm talking about and exactly why I do some of the things I do. And again, I also share this because in some respects, when I deal with parents, I hear them regurgitate some of this information. And again, I've already said, I think it can be a little misguided. So I at least want a piece of content to help calibrate my views on some of this stuff. And that's what we're going to do today. I was listening to a popular youth soccer podcast, and the speakers made a few arguments. And I want to talk about some of the arguments they made because these are very common. And I want to again offer my perspective and context on them. So the podcast was pretty long. I listened to a lot of youth soccer content. The podcast was a little long, but I'm going to distill their main arguments, and I hope I don't mischaracterize it, into a few points. And again, these arguments that they make are very common in youth soccer circles, and I just want to attack them head on. The first argument is, hey, the way people learned the game in the past was mainly in the streets and playing with their friends, right? And some of the greatest footballers of all time came out of those generations. And they weren't doing, you know, unopposed technical training and ball mastery and all that kind of stuff, nowhere near the level that folks are doing it now. And they probably weren't even doing a whole bunch of quote unquote individual training in that way. So that's one argument. The next argument is these guys happen to run a clinic and they use what they call a game model approach to training. So they don't do any, by their own admission, they don't do any unopposed technical training in their clinic. It's all 1v1, 2v2, 3v2, that kind of stuff. Okay. And their point was there were kids in their clinic who they know are only getting their soccer training from them, who are not learning any specific moves in a you know, systematic curriculum. They're not learning any specific moves in that way, but they are able to perform those moves in the game context. Therefore, those kids, and this proves that those kids never needed to be specifically taught the Cruyff or specifically taught the El Behind. They go on to say that even Cruyff himself, when interviewed, said, hey, I didn't practice the Cruyff over and over again. I just saw the situation and it kind of happened naturally. Further suggesting that you don't need this unopposed technical training to learn any moves. Another argument they make, and this kind of gets into sort of the parents' role in helping their kid as well. And this is a common one theme that we have on our Facebook group as well, is because the majority of kids are going to be coach, especially during a foundation phase, by a volunteer parent who would not have played at a high level or a coach who would not have played at a high level, it's almost a situation of the blind leading the blind. There's no way you can expect the parent to demonstrate and show how and teach the move and teach the precision of that move in a way that is transferable to the game. Their technique is just not going to be good enough. So even if you did believe that teaching in that way, and I'm calling it monkey see, monkey do, even if you did believe that was a good way of skill helping accelerate skill acquisition, you don't have the troops on the ground, in this case, the grassroots coaches, who have the technical skill to be able to do that. And another argument, and this is another very common one they make, that's made often in youth soccer spaces, is because no action is ever the same. No technique is ever the same. No, every time, even the same person, when they kick the ball, pass the ball, dribble the ball, it's always going to be slightly different. You can't possibly teach anyone one correct way of doing something. This is an argument they make. And then they go on to say, and this is a very common one, there's a study out there that shows that they have a control, two control groups, one that does only game-like training of particular skills, and one that does only unopposed training. And the kids who do the, and they're the same level, all this kind of stuff. The kids that do the unopposed, sorry, the game-like training outperform the kids who do only the unopposed technical training when it comes to football actions and game-like activities. And then they go on to say, not only do they outperform them when it's in opposition, they outperform them when performing individual unopposed drills as well, further suggesting that there's no place for unopposed technical training, especially in a team context. They add the qualifier that if you're by yourself and you have no one around, then yes, you can relegate unopposed individual technical training to being done in that context only. So I'm going to try to tackle as many of these as I can head on. And I'm going to try to be logical, but it's kind of hard because to be super, super logical and sequential, because it's just a heavy subject and there are a lot of moving parts. So let's first talk about, broadly speaking, what happens when a person becomes better at something, more skillful, or learns. Let's just talk broadly speaking. So that process, what you're actually seeing is commonly described as strengthening neuroplasticity, right? And the way neuroplasticity is strengthened is through performing activities. But it doesn't necessarily have to be one particular activity over, no, let me say it another way. All activities, the result of all activities is the strengthening of neuroplasticity. So when my sons are outside free playing, they're strengthening neuroplasticity. When they're doing ball mastery drills, they're strengthening neuroplasticity. When they're in their team training environments, they're strengthening neuroplasticity. When they are messing around with the ball in the living room, they're strengthening neuroplasticity. So what that means is you're always, for the most part, going to see a increase in performance, regardless of what methodology you use to increase neuroplasticity. We're going to talk about neuroplasticity, but that's very important. So if you have a view that says, you know what, I don't believe in, I'm just going to make this up. I think between the ages of 6 and 10, kids need to be doing unopposed technical training for an hour and then 30 minutes of free play. If that's your view, right? Unopposed technical training for an hour and then 30 minutes of free play, if that's your view. You're going to be able to say in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, see, look, we did the L behind and Cruyff pull, and then we went to free play, and little Johnny did the L behind Cruyff pull. And the reason he was able to do that is because we practiced it over and over and over again in an unopposed setting. You're going to be able to say that. And if your view is, you know, we got an hour and I'm going to do 10 minutes of unopposed technical training and 50 minutes of 1v1, 2v2, small sided games, and so on, you're going to be able to make the same claim. And you're going to be able to point to whatever you want to in order to support that claim. And then if you say, you know, nope, we don't, team environment, we don't want to waste any time with unopposed technical training. We just want to do game realistic, football action driven contextual drills and exercises, you're going to see improvement, and you're going to see kids doing things that you previously thought, that they previously thought were unmanageable, and you're going to be able to make the same claim. So the first point I want to make is, anytime foot is on the ball, anytime eye is watching foot on the ball, anytime body is in that environment, mind is in a football environment, you're going to see improvements. Especially at those younger ages, because they're like sponges, and the science will tell you that the younger they are, the faster and the more malleable their brain is to learning. So you're always going to be right, right? No matter what you decide, you're going to see some accelerated growth. The first point I would like to make before we even get into how the brain works is, you have to be careful with ranking training methodologies in this way. However, this is not a soccer specific concept. This is a mathematical concept that you can apply to pretty much anything, like finance or risk management or just common sense, meaning don't put all your eggs in one basket. And if you're going to do that, you better really know that you're going to be in the black. So I have always argued that if learning and youth soccer is like any other discipline I'm familiar with, a diversification of methods, a diversification of investments, tends to be intrinsically better than one thing or the other, right? Now, the balance of that diversification will depend on a number of factors, but none of us are intelligent enough or smart enough or capable of always getting the perfect balance. So if someone comes to you and says, I know the perfect balance of training, 10 minutes of this, 20 minutes of this, 30 minutes of this, perfect. It's definitely better than an hour doing of this. Or da, da, da. I would be cautious. I would be skeptical of that claim, right? We don't know the perfect mix. So what that means in my personal life, which is kind of common sense, is I observed what my son's clubs are doing. And what they do is a reflection of their values, what they think is most important. And I'm pretty agnostic because I know I want to diversify their soccer experience. So whatever they do, then I try to diversify it. So here we go. So one club is kind of possession based, a lot of passing, moving, getting into space. One is a little less of that, right? But it's always a team thing. And neither of those clubs spend a lot of time on individual ball mastery, individual technical stuff. And because we're paying for the service, they don't just have the kids out there free playing per se. And that's a huge per se. But even if they did, for one of them, but even if they did have them just free playing, they would be free playing with the same kids, which is not, in my opinion, an ideal situation for free play, where you want a diversity of kids and you want coaches and parents not to be too involved at times. So what do I do? And there's another thing too. And then socioeconomic and economically and culturally, the families are pretty similar. So I know diversification is pretty important for development and, you know, just a holistic approach to soccer skill. So what do I do to address? So I do a heavy dose of individual technical training to diversify what they're getting in the team experience. And then I also put them in different free play environments. I try my best to encourage as much free play as I can. And I have them participate in, I hate to say it like this, but ethnic either leagues or ethnic environments. And all of that is an attempt to provide a holistic training experience, holistic soccer experience for them. So that's number one. So now that we've talked about diversification and the fact that I'm very hesitant to say that one way is better than another in that way, let's go back to the original point that I made, which is anytime you're involved in soccer in any context, you're going to get better. So what am I really saying? Because when foot is on the ball or you're in that environment, you're strengthening neuroplasticity. And what is neuroplasticity? Neuroplasticity works by allowing the brain, and let me just say I'm reading this, I'm getting my master's on Google here. Neuroplasticity works by allowing the brain to change its structure and function through the strengthening or weakening of connections between neurons called synapses. So those connections between the neurons are called synapses or synapses. I hope I pronounced that right. Yes, synapses. So that connection between those neurons is what you're strengthening. Based on experience and repeated activity, essentially rewiring itself to adapt to new information and situations. So let me repeat that one more time. Neuroplasticity works by allowing the brain to change its structure and function through strengthening or weakening of connections between neurons. And those connections are called synapses, based on experiences and repeated activity, essentially rewiring itself to adapt to new information and situations. This process involves the creation of new synapses, the strengthening of existing ones through repeated long-term use, and weakening unused connections, enabling learning, memory formation, and the recovery, and even recovery from brain injuries to some extent. Now, the most important part to me is rewiring itself to adapt to new information and situations. So that brings me to the next point. Oftentimes, people assume this that the learning process involves sort of a monkey see, monkey do framework. I'm going to practice the Cruyff turn. I'm going to practice an inside turn, an outside turn, an L behind, with the explicit expectation that the child is going to use that same particular skill that they just practiced in the context of the game. Well, I saw we practiced L behind for 15 minutes. Now I want to see you use L behind in the game. As a matter of fact, I have to talk parents off the ledge often because they expect that because their child has practiced these particular moves in isolation at home, they expect the child to just be able to recall those moves in a game situation. They will even observe the child recall these moves in a practice situation and become frustrated when the child does not appear to be able to recall those moves in a game situation. Again, this is the monkey see, monkey do framework. But it's important to remember, just like when a child free plays, you don't free play and then expect them to recall. Like they get better, but going to do exactly what they did in that yesterday's free play today. It's the same way with, say, ball mastery exercises. When my sons do a continuous L behind, I'm not expecting them to do a continuous L behind in the game. I am just strengthening brain functions that govern those types of movements so that it's easier for them to adapt to new information and situations. And I'm going to add this piece in the context that it's needed. Right? So all of that variation that's in anytime soccer training, for example, that variation is there not because I want them to be able to do 100 different moves in a game. That variation is there because it's strengthening the neuroplasticity, but we don't know how it's going to manifest itself in the game, right? My older son, for all practical purposes, he has 2 or 3 pitches. And if you ever see him play in real life, he is excellent at those 2 or 3 pitches. 1v1 situation, he's going to do a couple scissors. He's going to do this. He's going to get by you, do what he got to do. If he's in a tight space, he's going to do a couple turns, and that's all he got. He got 1 or 2 pitches. And he's excellent at them. But he can recall any move that I ask him to do upon demand because he just practices it so much in the backyard. All right, but I don't expect him to do the double cross, scissors, step over, and then shoot. That's just not his personality at the moment. Maybe that'll change. That's not his game, right? And my younger son does stuff in games and in practice. I don't know where he gets this stuff that we never actually literally practice, but again, strengthening the neuroplasticity. So we want to dispel this monkey see, monkey do framework when we're applying it to learning, which then brings me to the next point that they say. Well, how could a person that hasn't played at a high level, a bumbling parent, you know, a grassroots coach, they don't have this type of technique. They can't show this level of detail. How can they teach this level of detail to the player? And the point is, they can't. That's not necessary in that way. There's not very many things that I have not been able to show my sons and the kids I train in slow motion so they understand what I'm looking for. But it's just the process of the reps in game, in an unopposed setting, being around the game, watching other people play the game. That's what strengthening neuroplasticity is all about. Not, oh, if I don't show you exactly how to do this move and I can't execute this move with the exact precision needed, right, that you're not going to learn it. And or if I'm able to show you this move with the exact precision needed, you are going to learn it. I don't think any of those matter in the way that the brain works. What matters is the repetitions, the context, the adrenaline, the chemistry, all this other stuff that fuels the learning process. So once I'm able to convey to you what I'm basically looking for in this unopposed setting, and the only reason I'm even doing that is to give you, I guess, something to do to help strengthen the neuroplasticity. So we talked about the fact that we don't want to put all our eggs in one basket. We talked about the fact that none of us know the perfect combination of training methodologies that yield the highest results. And if you do, email me, I'll invite you on the show. We talked about the fact that we want to get rid of this monkey see, monkey do framework. So now we want to talk about the fact that, and this is often said, right? Well, in the past, we learned this way and nobody was doing this and nobody was doing that. So therefore, if they were able to do it in the past, we can still do that today. Now, I will go on record as saying, look, the greatest books in the world, the greatest plays in the world, or some of the greatest books and some of the greatest plays were written way before any modern technology was invented. They were written before pencil and paper were invented. So what has worked in the past, and has and those methods that have stood the test of time, such as play, will always have a role in the learning process. But that does not mean that we don't incrementally get better, and that does not mean that we don't modify and adapt what we're doing to today's situation. My children, I always say this, they're not playing soccer for 10 hours on the beach in Brazil. Kids have gadgets. Kids, even if they love soccer, it's just a lot more things that's taking their time. School and academics are a much bigger part of our children's lives than they were generations ago. And so if I want them to get thousands and thousands of touches relatively quickly, because they're not going to be out there free playing all day, I may need to modify the approach. And even the people that they quote who, live and die by street soccer, Johan Cruyff is an example. He comes from a country that brought us systematic ball mastery. That's like what the he comes from a club that spread systematic ball mastery, and every kid has a ball and unopposed technical training and routine, 10,000 touches. They were the ones who exported it to the rest of the world, which is showing the tent of learning can be a lot bigger than we give credit for. So I talked about the fact that anytime you're doing something, you're going to see results. And I want to specifically tie it to the example they gave about the kid in the clinic. If you have a kid coming to anything and they're playing, they're playing, they're playing, you're going to see improvement. If you have a kid, and this happens all the time because the clinic I run, we do a mix of things, but we do a heavy dose of unopposed technical training. Well, invariably, every week, their parents come back and say, oh, so and so is in the game and she scored 3 goals and she never scored before. She won all her 1v1 battles. And I could take that and say, see, doing, majority unopposed technical training works. But I know that it's a tapestry of experiences, mental and physical, that result in a kid performing well or anyone performing well. The mere fact that their parents are bringing them to me, which, with zero marketing, is telling me that these are motivated people who are seeking decent training for their child. And so I don't know, maybe it's the parents' involvement that also supports all of this, right? And gives the child confidence. So I'm going to be very hesitant to go out and tell somebody, I got the magic formula and this is what you need to do. What I can share with people is this is what has worked for me. Take the parts of what has worked for me and apply it to your situation. And you know your child, and you know the context of the training they're receiving. Now, and the final thing is they, well, final two things is, at the risk of sounding defensive. So it's off this study, and I kind of got to find this study. I see it every once in a while. There's a study out there that I don't even know if it's peer reviewed. And again, I'm not qualified to comment too much on the study. But the study basically says, hey, they have one control group where the kids just do unopposed technical training exercises, dribble through cones, blah, blah, blah. And they have another group where they do game-like training. And then at the end of the study, they assess the kids, and the kids who only do game-like training outperform the kids in those game-like exercises than the ones who only do individual sort of unopposed training. And then they go on to say, Not only do they outperform them in game-like scenarios, they actually outperform them in individual technical training exercises as well. Therefore, furthering the belief that there's no place for individual unopposed technical training in a team context. Now, I'm not qualified to critique a study one I haven't even read, but these are my initial thoughts. You guys can take them for what you want is a grain of salt. We talked about in a previous podcast execution risk, the gap between what is supposed to happen or what you believe is happening and what is actually happening. So I don't know what they were doing in the study, in the various two control groups, but there is nothing that I have seen in real life that suggests to me that what my kids are experiencing is going to mimic what is happening in those control environments close enough to draw any real conclusions. So what that means is when we talk about execution risk, the folks who are creating quote unquote game-like training sessions to get game-like activities are probably not going to create them in the way to optimize the results they're looking for. And I don't know if I can. The reason I train my kids is because they don't do unopposed technical training, but when they did, they didn't pay enough attention to detail. So it's very difficult for me to take this theoretical piece and apply it to real life because I don't think real life is going to be executed in that way, right? And so if I'm dealing with if I and we're going to do it, I'm going to do a show on this, but if I have a grassroots coach or an amateur coach or beginner coach or parent coach, I'm always starting with simplicity and I'm going to take a diversified approach and I'm going to at least be able to say at the end of practice, I know every kid will have had these interactions. They will have touched the ball this many times. They will have done these things with the ball. Come heck or high water, I can guarantee that. Because even when you're doing small-sided games, you know, your kids have biases. You got to get the pairings right. You have to have the constraints right. You have to draw out things. You have to give them information when they need it. And to ex get the benefits that they're touting in an accelerated way, I think some of that needs to happen. Again, not overcomplicating it, because remember, anytime you're playing, you're going to get better. So that's that. The second thing that was not super clear with me, maybe I got to do some research on this. Some people can chime in. It's not clear to me that they compared one approach to a diversified approach, right? So I don't think any reasonable person is arguing that if you only do unopposed training, you're gonna whatever. You have to compare that control group, say to, if they only did game-like scenarios to a combination of some unopposed training and some game-like training. And then it was one more thing I was gonna say about that. Yeah, so you didn't do that. And then again, diversification, I'm always gonna land on that. I'm not sure. And I'm not sure. It's just very difficult for me to accept that you can't squeeze 5 minutes into or 10 minutes of unopposed into a team environment because I see again the execution risk. People waste a lot of time. They waste time during transitions. They waste time at the beginning of practice. They have kids not involved in the action. They take a lot of time to explain it. So all of this time is wasted, I think, could easily be maximized by having someone do the equivalent of morning work. So I think, oh, and there's one more thing that they said, and this is a recurring theme as well. Because no two actions are the same, you can't teach any particular skill with a degree of precision because there's no right way and there's no absolutely wrong way. And of course, that's true. But I think common sense will tell us that there's some, you know, not standards, but some best in class sort of starting points, and then that you kind of share with kids. I'm losing a term, but I'm missing. I can't remember the term, and I'm getting tired. It's 1 a.m. here, but there are best practices. That's what I'm looking for, that you can introduce to children with the understanding that, and this is how I explain to the kids in my clinic, that you know your body, you know what feels comfortable, right? But if you're trying to dribble with pace using the toe, for example, even though nobody dribbles exactly the same, we probably can correct that. If you're trying to pass using the bottom of your feet, you know, we probably can correct that. But that's not to negate the fact that you can, especially in the game situation, you may use different parts of your foot in a way that would not be technically considered correct. But if we're working on allowing the ball to roll across your body, we're working on allowing the ball to roll across your body. And yes, the way the ball rolls across your body and the way that pass is always going to be a little different, but we can introduce that if to our left and right backs. So I'll just use this as an example, as one technique they can employ to get the ball off their feet in a less risky manner. So I don't necessarily buy that. So why do I say all of that? Because again, I'm talking to our parent trainers who are listening to this stuff. And what I did today is I posted a piece, that soundbite. I posted it on the Facebook group because I wanted to see what people's responses were. And you can join the Anytime Soccer Training Facebook group and join the conversation. And I'm going to read one response, right? And then I'm going to read my response to wrap it up. So again, the response is, my son's experience as well, along with a number of players in town. He wasn't taught, in quotes, how to do any skills, in quotes, but is still very effective with the ball at his feet. Doesn't mean that skills can't be taught, but not much specific instruction is needed if they have consistent opportunities to use, get feedback from a game or opponents, or and refine. So again, yeah, you're right. You don't need to, quote unquote, teach anybody anything specifically. But I would not, and this is what tends to happen, I would not disparage an approach that says, you know what, I'm going to spend 10 minutes kind of going over some stuff with you guys in an unopposed setting, and then we're going to do 40 minutes of this, or I'm going to do it this way. And I think that's the risk of these conversations, that we are entering into an environment, a learning environment, where people are afraid, not afraid, that's not the right word. It appears that we are convincing ourselves that there is a methodology out there that's far superior than other methodologies. And oh, by the way, it's fun to the kids. And I'm not so sure about that. So then I responded a bit tongue in cheek. The funny thing about the brain plus the environment is that you don't need to learn in a monkey see, monkey do manner. Strengthening neuroplasticity, and this is a repeat of what I got off Google, allows the brain to rewire itself and adapt to new information and situations easier. Said plainly, if you practice a scissor, that doesn't mean that the intent has to be the player does a scissor in a game, no more than becoming physically stronger means that it has to be tied to only a handful of options. If you watch my son for 1 second and spend a half a second watching me, you're going to know immediately that I did not, in quotes, teach them any moves. I just accelerated the natural process of learning by giving them a diversity of experiences. So as usual, I will always defer to all of the above. And I'm going to follow this podcast up with my preferred method of team training. We talked about this, but how I think it can be executed in a recreational environment. So again, this is a podcast about nothing in the sense that as a parent trainer, as long as your team's club or coaches are doing whatever it is that they believe is right, as long as they're doing it well, they ain't gonna change and your child's gonna be fine. Whatever they say they're doing, as long as they're doing that well, great. And then you just come and fill in the gaps. But I wanted to offer this piece of information so that that gap filling process, you give it the amount of intention and reverence that it deserves. And don't get caught up in this sort of this is better than that or that is better than that, because you don't know it more than likely, and I don't know it. We can weight those things based on our personal preference, based on our experiences, based on our children's personalities, based on what we believe they want to get out of the game. We can weight it, but the bottom line is none of us have a crystal ball, and none of us have the magic formula for how much time they should be doing small set of games. How much time should they be doing games with constraints? How much time should they be doing free play? How much time should they be doing one-on-one, 1v1? How much time should they be doing unopposed? I talked to some people to say, you know what? I only do 1v1, 2v2, right? At this age, if you can't do 1v1, 2v2, you don't need, then all this other stuff is irrelevant. And I'm just not so sure that's the right approach, right? Because you're also, now you're excluding other things. And I talk to people who say, I spend half my practice doing unopposed technical training. And I don't know if that's right because you may be excluding other things. So you'll have to ultimately make your own decision. I've come to my decision, which is we're going to spend 10 to 15 minutes on unopposed technical training, but I can't tell you that's better than 100%. I can tell you the diversification is likely better than 100% on one thing, but I can't tell you what the proper mix is with any degree of precision. All right, this is Neil Crawford, founder of Anytime Soccer Training. Let's get better together.